That is Gil Evans and Miles Davis, the Buzzard Song that they did. This is Gil Evans' birthday, born on this day in 1912. And all week long, we're bringing you a student-produced radio series about the post-industrialized places in our community. It's called the Post-Industrialized Places Project at UMBC. Students have been working, interviewing, recording, and editing these pieces throughout the semester. I've been working with this class, and we are presenting their pieces every day in a series. And without further ado, here's the second installment of Stories of Deindustrialized Baltimore, this episode called The Struggle.
Yesterday, we heard the voices of residents of Baltimore City neighborhoods of Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, Fairfield, Masonville, and Wagner's Point, blended with the voices of Sparrows Point communities across the water in Baltimore County, to provide our listeners some background on the history of these two communities. Today, we are going to hear voices of both communities as they share their stories of struggles, hard work, and sacrifice throughout the rise and fall of industry in the Baltimore region.
They had Bethlehem Steel, they had
Buffalo Tank,
and then
Run the Shipyard,
Conoco Oil.
Yeah.
And of course,
fertilizer factories.
Yeah. They have two fertilizer factories.
Yeah.
One was Roster's, another one was
Raisin.
In Virginia, Carolina, but they called it Raisin.
Yeah.
And my mother worked there. And I worked there, too.
Where Fairfield, where the boys in Fairfield were concerned, they got the unwanted job. Sort of like last hired and first fired. Mostly never hired. But the fertilizer factories, where it's dust and dirty work, the coal pier, the scrap yards, the oil companies, you couldn't work there. Shipyard, Maryland Shipbuilding Dry Dock, when those ships was coming for repairs, they would hire the African-American boys over to clean out the bilge of the ship, the dirty up, down in the hole, getting all the filthy oil out of the ship, clean out the bilge, and once that's done, out they go. So it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for us down there. Back there during that time, segregation was quite rampant. We had to make do what as best we could down there in our neighborhood, because Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, Wagner's Point, Masonville, for the most part, we wasn't allowed. What affected the war taker? It exposed us to a lot of things that we wasn't exposed to before the war, because the shortage of manpower forced the country to put us in a lot of positions that we would never have been put in beforehand. Police department, fire department, Baltimore Transit. They would hire women before they hire a black man.
During World War II, Sparrows Point hired a lot of black women. And when the war was over, they terminated the service. In 1955, a group called the Statesmen started complaining about the fact that at that particular time, Bethel still had no black policemen, no black truck drivers, no black firemen, and they wanted blacks to be in those jobs. That's how it started. And they wanted to integrate the bathrooms. And they were meeting and they talked. That's how the civil rights really started.
You looked at management. All management, you had a handful of blacks and the rest of them was white. All your top management was white. All your superintendents, all in labor relations, all white. So this is what you had to deal with.
Later on in 1964, when Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill, a part of the Civil Rights Bill said that if you had government contracts, you could not discriminate. And that really, really got the movement going.
And then, you know, the thing about it is, I think what probably kept me at a certain level is because, again, my father was between president and vice president. He already had paved the way for me and made connections within that company and got respect from out of that company. So it made it a lot easier for me that I didn't have to go through a lot of struggles that people went through. And it's like, all right, I just took the bull by the horn and dealt with the issues and just say, let's do the best we can.
I got locked up three times for demonstrations at the plant. And the worst thing ever happened to me was they called my wife and they said, you got to come get him out of jail. And she said, he got there, stay there. We struck for 116 days. And my son was born today. We went back to work. And I went back to the plant to go to work. Got called back home again. So it was tough. It was tough on a lot of people, 116 days. But we fought like hell. We fought like hell over the years for what we believed in.
You would not believe how many people have been killed at Sparrows Point, I'd say since the 60s. It's in the 200s.
You know, right here on Dundalk Avenue, we have a big memorial with all the names of the people that were killed at the point. And I was there for four of them. That I was a union rep at that time and had to investigate it. And that was nothing more horrible than to, you know, to see, you know, what actually happened for a man that's coming to work to support his family and never makes it home. It's very sad.
I was there for the last death of one of my coworkers who fell off of a transporter. And that's something I'll never forget. You'll never forget when you see someone fall and it brings her down on the ground. You'll never forget it.
I worked at Credit in the Davison's. They had a acid pit. It was all big as this room. And it was all lead around the outside. And they had a plank going across if you want to go across. Well, the acid will make a scum. Well, they had contractors there that day, and evidently they weren't told about that. And the guy was going across there and fell in. So the time they got him out, his hair on down was all eaten away.
I mean, Bethlehem Steel was one of the hardest environments that that you could work in. I mean, the hours that we worked, the extreme heat, the freezing cold. You worked Christmases, 4th of July's, it didn't matter.
So, but you'd work, no matter what the temperature was, no matter what the weather was, you'd work constantly around the clock.
So I worked at Bethlehem Steel. My first job had a jackhammer. Worked at the blast furnace department, number 5 blast furnace. And I was scrawny, you know. I couldn't even pick the thing up.
I've got some good things I brought out of Bethlehem Steel. I got asbestosis. I got COPD. You know, I can't breathe. You know, I can't hardly walk anymore. But what that goes with the job that I had down there, like I told you earlier, that all the chemicals and the conditions that you worked under, you know, down the road, you pay for that. The asbestos was unbelievable that we had to work in areas where the asbestos looked just like it was raining. It's snow, actually. You just flakes of it coming down.
But I knew that you couldn't breathe any kind of dust, you know, while you were working that hard, doing bulwark day after day. So I asked for respirators, but they told me that my life wasn't worth $300,000, the company did. Because if I brought in respirators or they gave me a respirator, everybody would want one.
My foreman had me come in one night. I had to open the mill. I had to turn the lights on to do my job. And during this time, I didn't have a babysitter. I didn't know what to do with my child. And like I said before, a lot of us had problems with our children. Where were we going to leave them, you know? And this was on 11 to 7. So I looked at my daughter. She was 2. I grabbed her little pillow. And she had on her little pajamas. And I drove to Bethlehem Steel. And I carried her up the ladder with me into my crane. And there she stayed. She slept with her bottle until I completed the end of my shift.
Even though the environment working in them coke ovens, oh my goodness, it was rough. But the people made the job, you know. And that was kind of the time that I didn't mind going to work. I would love to go to work. I used to work overtime, going there on my days off. My wife used to tell me, say, oh, look, I don't mind you working when you at work, but when you go in there on your days off, that's L time. That's me and the kids time. That ain't gonna happen.
Today we heard voices of John Jeffries, Milton Breger, Lorraine Curtis, Bud and Stanley Stupai, Darlene Redman, Darnell Hamlet, Jeffrey McCoola, Parnell Chapel Jr., Addie Houston Smith, Natalie Johnson, Don Kellner, and Ralph Dudley as they share their stories of hard work and struggles. Tomorrow, we're going to again hear from the members of these communities to better understand the friendships and bonds that formed within industrial development. Today's piece was produced by UMBC students Bonnie Bowen, Brandon Byrne, and Sander LaBelle.
And please consider joining us for an evening of food, music, silent auctions, raffles, and games to raise money for the Filbert Street Community Garden. The Filbert Street Community Garden is a conservation project, educational space, and food farm located in the Curtis Bay neighborhood of Baltimore. The gala will be held this Sunday, May 18th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at 2640 Space, which is located at 2640 St. Paul Street in Charles Village. Tickets can be purchased at the event or on missiontix.com.